Sidebar every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome to Sidebar with Cindy with me, Cindy Sire Van Sail, Afropolitans on Kaya FM 95.9. Tonight we are looking at the work that the Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group does with support groups, and they celebrated Support Group Awareness Week last week from the 25th to the 30th. But we'll be catching up with Crystal Kemp. She's a SADC support group coordinator, and finding out what they do and why their work is so important.
Because a conversation a day is exactly what the doctor ordered. Sidebar with Cindy. Every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome to Sidebar with Cindy with me, Cindy Swift and Sale, on this rainy Thursday night, Afropolitans in Johannesburg. Tonight we're looking at the important work that the Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, does with support groups. It was Support Group Awareness Week from the 25th to the 30th of January, and Crystal Kemp is the SADAG support group coordinator, and she joins us on the show tonight to tell us what the work that they do is all about and why it's so important. Later on in the show, we'll be joined by Usmangile Mateke. She's a support group member for family members and loved ones living with mental illness, and Ntabiseng Libina is a support group leader and a social worker, and they'll be sharing with us what they do and why it's so important. Mental health matters, Afropolitans, and as I was saying to Ukuku earlier on, 2020 and 2021 have been very challenging and very taxing for people's mental health. And this is why the work that SADAG does is important. It's important to know that there is a resource such as SADAG. It's a free resource. They have a 24-hour hotline, and they have counselors on standby to help you with whatever you're going through. And I'm living with mental illness myself, and this is why I love doing such topics, because I can relate and I can share my experiences. It is important to get help, Afropolitans. I always say to people that I wouldn't be here, I wouldn't be alive today, if I hadn't gotten the help that I needed in 2013. When I had a mental breakdown and I was admitted into a mental hospital, and then shortly after that, 7 weeks later, my mom passed away. And my psychiatrist was fantastic, my psychologist was fantastic, and they really helped me to come back, in inverted commas, because it was very bleak. It was a very, very dark time of my life, and I was there for about 4 years, and I can see the light now. It's not easy, and every day is a struggle. Every day there's other challenges in life, but all the things that I learned from the psychologist, from group therapy, all those coping mechanisms have helped me be alive today, and this is why we're having this conversation. So Crystal Kemp, thank you so much for being on the show tonight, and really thank you for the work that you guys do at SADAG. It's a free service, it's a free resource available to everyone that can access it, and we really appreciate what you do.
Thanks, Dr. Cindy. It's so lovely to be here tonight and to share this information with you, all of the listeners.
So I think the first thing, Crystal, let's just speak about why are support groups important?
I think, a world where it is so stigmatized, and even more so within South Africa, and we have an immense lack of resources for mental health available. And so I think support groups create that space where people can get help, where people can share, where they can feel supported, where they can feel help, feel heard, without the fear of experiencing stigma, which so many of us expect to face.
And the stigma is real. I think speak a bit about that, because mental health stigma persists. And I've tried my best. I've been tweeting about my mental health issues since 2014, and I've tried my hardest to get people to understand that people don't choose to have mental illness. It's a chemical imbalance of the brain. There is help available, but as long as we have these myths around mental illness, we won't understand what the next person is going through. So just talk about some of the stigma and the myths around mental illness that you have come across.
I think one of the most common misconceptions is just be positive, or look at all the things that you do have in your life and you're so blessed. It's more than that. It's it's a mental illness. And in the same way that we would consider cancer as a serious illness, mental health needs to get that same recognition, where you do need to go and get help. You do need to see a doctor. You can get support, and support is out there. And I think that's one of the reasons that we hosted Support Group Awareness Week, is to create that awareness. And I think the work that you do and the work that SADAG does on fighting the stigma, to be like, actually, it's bigger than that. And we can't just choose to be happy. It's not that easy. Yes, we can't feel unempowered and like we don't have any control. We do have control, but sometimes we need medical support and help as well.
And family members and friends, make it difficult for people that need help to seek help. There's a lot of shame attached to mental illness, especially, you know, the fear of being seen as weak and not being able to handle your problems, you know. And we all have different levels of resilience. You know, we're not all the same. And you can't downplay what a person is going through just because you think they should be strong. Someone else has gone through that, so why can't you go through it too? In a support group, how do you make sure that it's a safe space for a person to share, you know, what's really in their heart, and not feel ashamed and not feel embarrassed and everything else that goes with it? How do you make sure that it's safe and we can open up?
You know, Dr. Cindy, going back to what you were saying about loved ones and family members, sometimes they can't understand because it isn't something that they've been through. On top of that, when we're sharing with family members, we're always and loved ones, we're always trying to consider their feelings as well. How are they going to feel if I say, I can't get out of bed, I don't want to do this anymore? What kind of accountability are they going to take on themselves to be like, but I'm here, how am I not providing, how am I not helping?
Mm.
So in a support group, we're surrounded by people that have had similar life experiences to us, who can truly understand that feeling of maybe not wanting to get out of bed, maybe not feeling like eating, maybe not feeling like, or feeling like rather, that the world would be a better place if they weren't in it. So what support groups do is they create an environment of people who have had similar life experiences, and so that fear of the stigma isn't present because you are there with people who truly understand. And we try to create a platform where there's equal opportunity, so everyone is given an opportunity to share within the meeting. Everyone is given the opportunity to be heard. And I think also really importantly is that there is an emphasis on that every person in the group is an expert of their own story.
Mm.
And so we all have the power to not only share and be vulnerable within the group, but also to help others who are around us. And that feeling of being able to be helped, but also help, is incredibly empowering.
And what is it about speaking to strangers that helps us? Because I found that when I was admitted at Portview Mental Hospital, when we had our group therapy sessions, it was great. It was great to speak to people that I didn't know, I hadn't met ever, and just to share my story and to hear their stories. What is it about sharing our experiences with strangers that is comforting?
Well, I think it's that feeling and that comfort that, yes, this person understands. They know what I've been through. They know these struggles. But also, like I said, when you share with a stranger, you don't necessarily have to worry about the burden that you may be sharing with them. And so often when we are dealing with our mental health, we feel like we have to do it by ourselves, and we don't. There's help out there. But sharing with a stranger that can empathize, that understands, that gets it, and that you can feel free of sharing without feeling this guilt of, well, maybe that my family will think that I don't appreciate everything that they're doing for me.
And when you set up a support group, do you choose people that are going through the same thing. How do you choose who's going to belong to what group?
So at SADAG, we have a multitude of different groups for different things. So we have groups that are perhaps more generalized and unspecified, for example, a mental health support group. And then we have more specific groups, like groups for people who have bipolar disorder, for example. And then we have groups for family members and loved ones of those with mental illness to assist the family members to manage. We have groups for fibromyalgia. I mean, the variety of different groups available is huge. So what would happen is if someone reached out to SADAG and said, I'm looking to join a support group, we would first have to find out a variety of different factors, for example, where they're based and what groups we have available in that area. COVID has pushed us into now hosting groups online as well,
yes,
which has had quite a beautiful effect because we're no longer limited by location. So people who perhaps stay in areas where there aren't as many support groups as others, they can now attend online groups and make sure that they also feel heard and supported. So we would find out where you're based, we'd find out what you were looking for. Very importantly, you know, a support group is not run, I would say 80% of our support group leaders are patients and ex-patients themselves. So they're not mental health practitioners.
I see.
So we would always say the counselor would chat to you and find out what's going on with you and where you are. A support group would never be our first line of intervention. We always want to make sure that you're getting that one-on-one help that you need, that you're getting a diagnosis, that you're getting to speak to someone and who's listening to you. And I think, like I said earlier, you know, we are really restricted in terms of mental health resources, but there is help out there, and SADAG has access to all of that information. So not to be discouraged if you don't have medical aid, not to be discouraged if you can't afford treatment. There are different options available, and we can get you that one-on-one help or tell you or point you in the right direction of where that help is. And then when you are managing and you're doing a little bit better, but you still feel like you need some support, you need to be surrounded by people that understand, by people who can relate to the fact that it's not something you have and then something you don't have. As I think you mentioned, it's a constant struggle, you know, but it is something that we can manage and we can overcome together. And there are things that we can do to empower ourselves to manage our mental health better. But sometimes we do need, or rather often, we do need that professional help. So our first point of call would always be, are you okay? Do we need to get you some one-on-one help? And then when you are managing, then we can most certainly refer you to a support group. And we would choose a support group based on what it is that you're looking for and what you're needing.
086-00-00959 is the number to call Afropolitans if you have any questions for Crystal Kemp. She's the SADAG, Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group, support group coordinator. And support groups are so important in helping people work through their mental health issues. And as Crystal mentioned, SADAG provides the services free of charge. So even if you don't have medical aid, you know, don't be afraid to contact them and get the help that you need. Because the sooner that we can help you, if you have identified that there's a problem, you know, the sooner that, you know, you can get better. So Crystal, how does one identify if they need help?
Look, everyone is different, and everyone is going to experience things differently. But if you are struggling to get out of bed, if you notice either an increase in your eating habits or a decrease or a lack of interest in food, are you not wanting to do things that used to give you pleasure, or perhaps when you are doing those things, maybe it's going out and hanging out with friends, obviously safely wearing your masks. But it's when you're doing those things and you're not getting the joy out of it, you're struggling to find the joy in things. It can also look like a decrease in personal hygiene, not wanting to get dressed, get out of your pajamas, not feeling like brushing your hair or even having a shower. If you are noticing anything in you that you identify as different to the normal, if you're not feeling like, you know, I'm Crystal and this is how I normally feel, you know, and you can see differences within yourself, you know, definitely contact us. Contact Sada. You can SMS us. Our SMS number is 31393, and we can get a counselor to call you. You can phone one of our toll-free numbers. Like you mentioned, now they're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So you can call 0800-456-789. You can also go to our website, which we are very excited because we recently launched a new support group tab on our website, which has so much information. We've got real-life stories. Yeah. We've got testimonials from support group leaders. And you can go there and engage with the page. I'm super, super pleased with it, and I know that the support group leaders and their members are too, because it just has a wealth of information, such as when do you join a support group, who should start a support group, how to go about starting a support group.
086-00-00959 if you have any questions, Afropolitans, for Crystal Kemp, who's the SADC support group coordinator. How does one go about becoming a group coordinator or a group facilitator?
So you contact me. What you can do is you can pop me an email. My email address is supportgroups@anxiety.org. Or you can contact a counselor, and they'll take you through the steps. So what you're kind of going to expect, or what you can expect, is you're going to have a chat to a counselor. They're going to see how you're doing. They're going to kind of, from the information you share, find out, you know, are you needing extra help and support, or are you in a space where you can give back and you can be a support to others? And then we go through so almost a screening process, and this is very much to make sure that starting a support group is going to be beneficial and not detrimental to your own mental health. We don't want to push you into something that you're not ready for yet. And then there is a 5-part online training series.
Mm-hmm.
And we also then strongly encourage, or as a prerequisite, that each new support group leader attend at least 3 different SADC support groups to get an idea for how the different groups are run, because like I said, everyone's going to experience things differently, and it's the same with different groups. Some are perhaps slightly more informational, while some are more of a supportive environment. And then, yeah, SADC, and I will take you through the steps one step at a time. We advertise the group, we promote the group, we can organize guest speakers for your group. We share information with you constantly, new handouts. And then if you do find that you're struggling either yourself or with a member of your support group, or perhaps just a support group in general, you can always contact me or contact SADC. We do have a plethora of incredible mental health professionals
you do,
on our
yeah.
board. And we can reach out to them, or I can reach out to them, especially if the problem's bigger than me or I'm not really sure. We have the most incredible support system at SADC within the team. It's a very hands-on environment. So together we'll troubleshoot and we'll find resolutions and we'll get there together. So you're not alone. It's a very supportive journey. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and I just think our support group leaders have turned really into a family, especially during COVID, where or where that extra help has just been so desperately needed.
So desperately needed. Crystal, we're going to keep you on the line. We have a caller from Kempton Park, Samuel, but we'll take him after the break. So we are going to keep you on the line, and we'll be joined afterwards by Simangile Matseke. Afropolitans, I'll be back right after this.
Sidebar with Dr. Cindy on Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome back to Sidebar with Cindy with me, Cindy Siwe Fansale, as we discuss mental health matters, Afropolitans. Very important to me, very close to my heart, because I'm living with depression, a mental health issue. And I'm speaking to Crystal Kemp. She's a SADAG support group coordinator. SADAG stands for the Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group. And on the 25th to the 30th of January, they celebrated Support Group Awareness Week. It's important for you to know the resources that you have around you so that you can get help if you feel that you might be having mental health issues. Crystal is still on the line. We're also joined by Usmangile Matseke. She's a support group member for family members and loved ones of those with mental illness. But before that, we're taking your calls on 086-000-0959. And we have Samuel from Kempton Park. Samuel, thank you for holding. And what question or comment do you have about tonight's topic?
Thanks very much for the opportunity. I think I'm really touched and moved by the discussion that has been held in the studio. I've got, my spouse has got depression, and so it's something that I've just found out recently. It's so funny that I've been living with her for over 11 years,
Yeah. But
I have not known that she was suffering from this. And then when she finally disclosed that to me and I asked if we could go for professional assistance, she refused point blank, and I must indicate that the situation has been taking its toll on everyone in the family.
Mm.
We've tried to make the family environment better and all of that, but my heart is just breaking at how she is really, her health is deteriorating, but she's refusing to go for professional assistance with us as a family. But I really don't know what else to do, because you see, particularly within our African culture, such kind of issues are really not that known. So sometimes when you have issues with a couple, they will call elders to come and discuss. And those things really do not assist, because you really need to be assisted by professionals, particularly if none of you knows that there is depression involved. So, like I said, I feel so, like, I don't know how to say this. I feel like I am blameworthy as well for having not picked up this issue for a very long time. But now, when I suggested to her that let's go for professional assistance, she refused, and she said, you know what, I believe that if I can go and stay on my own, I'll be better. So I've tried all that I could. She's a kind-hearted person, very generous, but just that aspect is just causing a lot of hurt in the family, and she's hating as well. What worries me the most is the fact that she definitely believes that if she can be on her own, she'll be fine. So I don't know whether I should let her go and be on her own, whether I should do something. I really don't know what next to do.
Okay, Samuel, thank you so much for sharing that with us. So stay on the line. So I'm going to give Crystal a chance to respond before I release her. And then Usmangele, who is a support group member and helps loved ones of those with mental illness, will also weigh in on the conversation, and we can give you guidance on what the next steps are. Crystal, I mean, Usmangele has shared from his heart, you know, the fact that his wife is going through depression, but she's not willing to seek professional help. Just a few comments on that before we let you go.
You know, first of all, Samuel, I just want to say the biggest thank you for sharing your story. And I can hear that it's really, really difficult, and it's hard for your family. And so I want you to also know that you can phone SADAG, you can chat to a counselor, because you're also experiencing a lot of emotions, concerns, additional stress. I think when we're looking, like I've said a few times, every person is going to be different and experience things differently. But maybe to start a conversation with your wife to understand why it is she doesn't want to get help, or doesn't feel like she can get help, It could be because she's afraid that she goes to look for help and the help isn't out there. It could be that she doesn't want to be a burden on her family. And then perhaps understanding that you may be able to take further steps. But the wonderful thing about SADAG is that we're just a phone call away. So it's not perhaps as scary as going to a hospital or to a clinic. It's speaking to someone who can reassure you, to let you know that what you're feeling is normal and it's okay and that there is help out there. So my advice would be, if you're up to it, for you to call SADAG for yourself, so that you're also getting support, but then also to perhaps encourage your wife if she can just make that one small step, which might feel like the most massive step, but to take that step and chat to a counselor, because like I said, there is support, and just let her know that she is heard and there is help and that it isn't hopeless.
Thank you so much, Crystal, and I'll hand over to Smangile now. Thank you so much, Crystal, for being on the show, and thank you for all the work that you do. Smangile Matseke, welcome to Sidebar Cindy. As I said earlier on, you're a support group member for family members and for loved ones of those with mental illness. And Samuel has just highlighted to us that his wife is living with depression. She's not willing to seek professional help. She wants to go and be on her own. And what she's describing, Afropolitan, those are the typical signs of major depressive disorder, where you are so depleted in terms of energy, the happy hormones in your body, in your brain, are completely depleted. And you reach a stage where nothing makes sense. And, you know, you want to be alone, you want to die, you've got no reason to wake up in the morning. So this is what Samuel's wife is going through. And it manifests itself in your family life. You know, you don't want to bath, you don't want to cook, you don't want to take part in anything. You want to be in your bed all day sleeping. And it makes it very difficult for everyone around you to function. And she definitely needs help, Afropolitans, because I was like her. I was in her same shoes, and the only thing that helped me was to be admitted into a hospital, get the medication that I need from a psychiatrist, and get the counseling that I need from a psychologist, and all of that. And I was admitted for 3 weeks, and then after 3 weeks things were a bit better, and it's just an ongoing process. I was in therapy and on medication for 4.5 years, and it really made a difference. So Smangile, I think let's just start off with just speaking to the reluctance of people to seek professional help, the things that hinder people from seeking professional help.
Hi, Zizi. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm glad to be in your show today. Cindy, the most important thing with us people is the opinions of other people. According to me, that's the most, that's the biggest problem for people to go out there to get help for mental illness. What happened with me when my mom was diagnosed with schizophrenia, when the doctor was telling me that my mom has schizophrenia, number one, I didn't know what the word schizophrenia means. Mm-hmm. Number two, people around me also didn't know what it is, you know? And what was happening to my mom, I haven't never seen it happen to anyone else around me. So I went to Google. That's where I researched, started typing the word schizophrenia. That's how I got to get to know about SADAG. I think if people can just want to get information with anything that's happening in your life, get information, I think that's what will help you.
Smangile, so in the support group that you belong to and you facilitate, or what will you work with, what kind of advice do you give to the loved ones who are living with people who have mental illness? You know, what are the do's and what are the don'ts when things come up?
Okay, in the support group that I am in, it's a support group of family members, like your caller. Family members with somebody who has a mental illness, who's mental ill in the family. Number one, for you to be able to support your family member, you need to have information, as I said. And the second thing that they've taught us here in the support group, you cannot pop from an empty cup. Self-care is very important. I need to take care of myself first before I can say I'll be able to take care of my mom. And I've seen it working because before I attended the support group, I used to concentrate more on my mom's sickness, forgetting about my own health. And later, it created problems for me as well. But now that I know that I need to take care of me first, it becomes easier for me to take care of her. And the other thing that Sadak helps us with, it's with the information, you know, because your loved one could be taking a medication that is not suitable for them. But when you are in a support group and you're sharing notes, then you get to understand that maybe you need to do this, maybe you need to do that. So that's what you learn from support groups.
And in terms of explaining schizophrenia to other family members or to other people, has the support group been able to help you to do that? Because abantu babuza izinto eziningi. They want to know why your mom is like this or why mama's, you know how people are. Have you been able to find a way of explaining mental illness and especially schizophrenia, which is probably one of the most misunderstood mental illnesses, in a way that people are able to understand and absorb and make sense of?
You know, Dr. Shinley, with mental illness, it's so difficult. You know, at one stage, I wish that my mom could have a different sickness. Because it's easy for you to explain cancer because they've seen somebody who's got cancer, you know. But I've learned to tell them that mental illness is like any other sickness. It's just in the head. But that person needs to be treated like everyone else that is sick, you know, because there's a lot of stigma. Even when you go to the clinic sometimes, you know, you're not accommodated because the nurses will treat you like any other patient. They won't treat you like you are a different patient. So that's how I explain it to people, like mental illness is just a sickness like any other illness, you know, and we need to talk about it. I'm glad we're having this conversation because especially in our communities, people are not talking about mental illnesses. There's so much stigma that if your loved one has a mental illness, maybe they are bewitched or there's something that you've done wrong, you know. But it's actually a sickness. You cannot explain why your parent has cancer as much as I cannot explain why my parents have schizophrenia.
And the church, if you're a churchgoer, Smanyele, have you had any support from the church? Because I know that the church struggles with mental illness, and I'm hoping that over the years, as the years go by, it's going to change. But, you know, there's that whole thing, kipamatimoni, let's pray in tongues, let's pour holy. I'm speaking from experience, by the way, with this. So, you know, did you get any support from your leaders at the church or just anybody at church?
I'm glad you asked that question. I'm actually a Christian. You know, I believed in God. Churches, I think it's not because they want to stigmatize. It's a lack of knowledge in most of the churches. There's a verse that I love in the Bible that says, where God is saying, my people are dying because they lack knowledge. So I believe even with churches, if they can get more information on this, the people will be easy to talk about their mental illnesses because people are not talking really in churches about their mental issues. So, yeah, I think if people can get more information, whether it's in churches, whoever, even the nurses and the social workers, really, I also believe if they have, they can get to know more about mental illness. We won't have so much stigma around it.
And when you joined a support group, were you initially concerned about sharing, or were there times where you felt that you mustn't share too much information, maybe to protect you know, your mom's dignity or her reputation, or were you just open and you just shared with an open heart?
With support groups, they create an atmosphere where you become comfortable. You know, you can share as much as you can because you know it's people with same experiences. You know, no one is going to laugh at you because of this, because we are all going through something in that group. So they create an atmosphere where it's easy for everyone to say what they want to say.
086-00-00959 is the number to call as we continue our discussion about the SADAG, Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group support groups. Very important work that they do, Afropolitans, and it's free of charge. SADAG is available 24/7. You can look them up on Google, and you can find what they do, and you can get the help that you need. It's important to get help, Afropolitans. If you feel that you may have a mental illness, that you're not coping with the pressures of life at the moment, just all the changes that have happened in the last year and are still happening as we continue 2021, I urge you to get help. Don't be ashamed to speak up. Don't be ashamed to reach out to professionals, because there is help and they can change your life. I'm speaking to Smangile Matseke. She is a support group member, and she belongs to a group for family members and loved ones of those with mental illness. And Smangile, some of the things that you've learned in the support group, have you been able to apply those skills in your own personal life?
Yeah, I have. You know, I am recently retrenched from work, you know, and I think if I haven't been in a support group, I won't be handling it the way I am handling it now, you know. So I've learned a lot of things being a member of a support group, you know. The number one thing is your self-care. The other thing that you must know as a member of a support group is things sometimes won't go the way you want them to go. Take, for instance, with my mom, you know. Like, I now know that she can't be like this forever. But the way that I am helping her, it's not harmful to me as well, you know. Because at first, the way I was helping her, it used to be harmful to me as well. I neglected my kids. My whole life was only based on getting her to be, getting medication for her, just getting help for him. So, yeah, it does help.
086-00-00959. We'll be taking more of your calls, Afropolitans, after this. Smangile Matseke, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for sharing your experience with the SADAG support group.
Sidebar every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
You're listening to Sidebar at Cindy with me, Cindy Siwe Fansel, as we continue with the last part of the discussion on SADAG, the Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group, and the work that they do with support groups. The 25th to the 30th of January was Support Group Week, where they celebrate, you know, people that are support group leaders, and they also just highlight the work that they do with support groups. Untabi Singh Libina is on the show now, and she is a support group leader and also a social worker. Untabi Singh, thank you so much for joining us on Sidebar at Cindy.
Good evening, Cindy, and thank you for having me.
So, Untabi Singh, please explain your role as a facilitator in a support group.
Okay, my role as a facilitator in the support group is firstly to ensure that as a group, we have people that are relevant for the group. So I conduct assessments to determine if the person is suitably qualified to join the kind of support group that I'm running, and then also facilitate the meetings of the support group, disseminate important information shared by SADAG that must reach the people out there, and also making sure that the support groups run smoothly, we stick to the goals of the support group, and create the safe space for everyone and make sure that everyone feels welcome and their voice is heard in the group during the sessions.
And if someone wanted to be a facilitator, but only focus on facilitating support groups around grief, for example, because they themselves are going through grief and they want to heal. Is becoming a facilitator a way of healing?
It's important to make sure that you've healed before. You know, although it will be a way for you to heal, but you need to have reached a certain level of healing so that you can be able to carry others, so that you don't change the purpose of the group and it focuses on you, but you are able to give to others. So that is what also SADC does for us. They make sure that before you become a support group leader, you are being trained and being prepared emotionally and psychologically to run the group. So if you are still in a much deeper wounded process by yourself, they wouldn't throw you in the deep end, but rather you have to reach a certain level of healing so that you are able to share your healing and share it with others without being triggered all the time when you are facilitating.
Oh, that makes sense. No, that definitely makes sense. And Tabi saying, you know, we have the COVID-19 restrictions and we, you know, we've had to change our lives and, you know, do a lot of things online. I know that SADC has also managed to adapt. Has that changed the way the support groups go? Does it feel better if it's on site, or you know, is the same, you know, atmosphere felt online?
I think instead of changing, it has expanded our options, because in the beginning we could only do face to face, but now there has also been the positive that has come from the COVID, in a sense that we can do online, people can join from the comfort of their own homes, and then there is no longer restrictions in terms of the area as well. So in my group, for example, I would be facilitating a group. I've got a lady from Cape Town and I'm based in Johannesburg, in Pretoria, which was something that could not have happened before. So as much as there were challenges that came with the COVID-19 restrictions, there are also some positives that we will carry with us, I think, beyond the COVID-19 pandemic, which will benefit a lot of people and increase accessibility of support groups to the people out there.
086-00-00959 is a number to call if you have any questions for Untabi Singh Libina. She is a support group facilitator at SADC. The hashtags on social media are Sidebar Cindy and Kaya FM Talk. I know that SADC, you know, their work is free, but is there any compensation? If someone is thinking of becoming a facilitator, they need to manage the expectations. So are you compensated for the work that you do?
They are not compensated at all. SADC is an NPO, and then it is largely run by volunteers. So people who are running support groups are people who have identified the need and have got a passion for mental health, and they want to give back to the community. So we are not compensated, but we are driven by the passion and the need to educate and end the stigma that is there against mental health.
So do you then have another source of income? Do you have a day job and then you do this on the side, or how does it work?
Yes, personally for myself, I've got a job, a day job. I'm running a private practice as a social worker, and then I would also give my time in between to run the sessions. Before the COVID-19, I would have the sessions on two Saturdays per month. I had one in Pretoria and I had one in Benoni, where both I could both offices. But now I've mixed the group. There's only one that I'm running, which is on the first Friday of every month at the evening at 6. So I do have a day job that I am employed at on a daily basis.
And if you identify, in Tabi Singh, that someone in the group needs more attention, or, you know, maybe they need individual therapy as opposed to group therapy, are you able to make that suggestion to that person?
Yes, hence the importance of assessment before one joins the group, because I usually would like to get the feel of who is in the group, where are they with their mental illness, how long they've had it, are they on medication, are they not, are they coping, and all that. So once I pick up that someone is struggling, I do reach out to them on an individual basis and ask the relevant questions and continue with another assessment again, then make a recommendation for them
that I think would be most suitable and will help them at that time, depending on what they are presenting with.
So consistency with therapy is important. I know that when I started, I'd go like once a week. And then as things got better, I then went once a month and then, you know, once every 2 months. But consistency at the beginning is essential. How do you ensure that group members are consistent to their attendance? Because, you know, skipping, it really makes a difference. It sets you back, but consistency helps you. So how do you make sure that a person keeps coming?
With the, I try to assess, because in a support group would normally discuss a matter that would affect all of us generally as a group. But if one has a burning issue that you see that they are trying to sway the group into, or, you know, I think maybe the fact that I'm a social worker, I've got that advantage of listening and assessing, then I would hear that, you know what, this member is battling with something. Then I would ask them on the side. I usually do not just put it in the group just but I would make that recommendation on the side, even make inquiries to find out, are you still taking on a medication? Because sometimes even if a person is attending their therapy, you find that something just happens and sets them way back off again, so their progress is disturbed. So I'm able to pick up such things. So when we are discussing something, and then you can pick up, you know your members, you know their progress, and they do talk. And the minute I pick up, I would say, you know what, as for that one, can we talk about it outside the group? And then I would make that recommendation just to find out a little bit as to what's happening now, how far are you as an individual with your journey, and then let's see what will be best suitable for you, because you need also to be in a certain level to be able to participate in a group. So if you are struggling individually, it becomes a bit difficult for you as well to join in the group, because the group cannot give you that individual attention.
They can't.
Yes.
And for those that don't have access to your online services, you know, what has happened with those people?
Unfortunately, you know, they have fallen off, but I've kept contact with some of them. But it's not everyone that was able to transition with me to online support, you know. But since we've got telephone contacts, they do contact me here and there. And when they have difficulties, I would encourage them to call SEDEC and at least speak to a counselor that will contain them at a time. But they have made progress, and they're able to get through the most difficult times through the telephone counseling, because they would at least access that.
And you know what I'm saying? That's one of the difficulties that the pandemic has brought about, that, you know, those of us that are privileged were able to transition to online without blinking. But there's so many people who've been affected by these changes. And you know, I really hope that they are getting telephonic help through SADAG, you know, when they need it. 086-00-00959 Afropolitans. You know, you still have time to ask Ntabi Singh Libina questions. She's a SADAG support group facilitator. SADAG is a Southern African Depression and Anxiety Group, and they provide mental health services, you know, for South Africa and beyond, and it's free of charge. It's important to know that. It's important to know that if you do need help, you can get help. Make sure you get help so that your life, you know, can change. And outside of the Focus Week, what other support does SADAG offer? Ntabi Singh,
you mean to us facilitators or
to the public? Yes,
it's they offer referrals. SADAG has a referral list, so you would know, they would know where you need to go to access mental health services, whether you can afford, because they've got professionals that are registered with them, and they also have the resources for government facilities. So you would know where to go for what. If you need to have someone to be involuntary admitted, SADAG would be able to assist you. Which of the government hospitals does that? Information on the SADAG website, information is always available, updating us and giving us the latest development on mental health. So there is a lot that the public can access and can get. So if there's any anything that one would like to know. There's no limit in terms of what SADC can assist. So far, I can think of, if you'd like to know, a doctor in Cape Town, SADC would be able to source something. They've got a resource list for you there. If you'd like to know, for teenagers with mental health, SADC would be the place to go. So they are doing a lot of work for our public in terms of providing resources and support for mental health.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned teenagers. Teenagers are very difficult to help with mental health issues. There's so much, the hormones and just all the other issues that come with being a teenager. Have you done any work with teenagers in Thabiseng?
Unfortunately, with SADC, no. They've got special people that are doing work with teenagers. In my group, with SADC, I am not working with teenagers as yet.
Okay. And in terms of the adults that you do work with, language, I've been thinking about that. Is language ever a barrier? And if it is, how do you overcome that?
Language is a barrier, but I have encouraged people to speak a language that they are most comfortable with. I can understand most of the basic languages that we use. Unfortunately, I cannot understand Afrikaans, but I've not had anyone that is struggling with Afrikaans. But so far, we've been able to help each other. If someone says something and then there's one missing, there's always a group member that's able to help the one that's falling behind to say, this is what they mean when they say that. So we encourage people that don't stick to English, even though I've got a white lady in my group, don't speak to English. If you want to express yourself in your African language, do so, and then we interpret to the other members. So we try to help each other together as a group to bridge the language barrier.
That's amazing work that you do, Thabiseng. And you know, if you find a group member that is not so willing to contribute to the discussion or is taking long to open up, how do you nudge them to start speaking? Because that speaking is important, it's helpful, but there are some people who are slow to warm. That's a Beyuti, who's who in the group, and you know, can I trust these people? How do you encourage them to start opening up?
You know, at first we don't put a spotlight on a person, but what I do in the beginning, we all give a feedback on how we have been. So everyone is talking in that part. This is what I'm, so you will say something. You know, no one would say nothing happened to me in that when you say, how have you been since our last meeting? Everyone gets to say something. And then in the end, eventually, when you reflect, you're like saying, what have you gained in this session and what's your feedback? We give everyone a chance. So we slowly get them to that comfortable space where they will end up opening up without putting pressure on them or putting them on a spotlight to say, you are not talking, or we see you are not saying something. But we make sure that we don't leave the group without giving all of us who are present an opportunity to say something. It may not be directly personal at the time, but at least say something. Don't come in and listen and leave throughout the entire session.
Thank you so much, Thabiseng Libina, SADC support group and facilitator. Thank you for the work that you do. And if someone is looking for the services of SADC, who should they contact? What's the number to call or what's the website?
They can contact the SADC website, www.sadc.org.za. And then for a support group, they can call 0800 21-22-23, and also they can check the SADC website as well. By talking to a counselor, they would be able to tell you which support group is available for you, because there are already support group facilitators that have resumed face-to-face under strict COVID-19 restrictions.
Yeah, yes,
but there are very few. So you can call SADC. They will be able to guide you and assist you. There are also some of my colleagues as well, other facilitators, that have reported facilitating WhatsApp groups as well. So we are actually exploring all means of technology that is available to reach out to everyone. At some point, there was also the Facebook groups, so the support groups, the facilitators, they're also exploring all the different avenues that are available out there. So taking hold of SADC, they will be able to tell you which support group is available at what means, and you can check which is most convenient for you.
Thank you so much, Afropolitans. Hope you enjoyed the show. Stay home, stay safe. I'll be back on Monday at 7 p.m.